Hi there, welcome to More Than a Wheelin. You are listening to episode 30, and I'm feeling shirty, or flirty, or dirty, or some of those, or all of those. My name is Sean M. Wheelin.
And I'm Poppy.
Hi there, everybody. Welcome to More Than a Wheelin, a podcast about creative writing written by me and occasional special guests, but most importantly, inspired by you. Hi there, welcome to More Than a Wheel, and we are coming at you from Castaway Studios in sunny downtown Collingwood, the greatest suburb in the world. And it is quite sunny today. It's really quite beautiful. And I'm very, very pleased to be joined in the studio by Poppy Sloan. Hi, how are you, Poppy?
Hello, Sean. I am good.
Excellent.
I am very good.
Now, I'll give you a little background on you. Poppy is the founder of a brand new regular spoken word night in Melbourne at Merry Creek Tavern called Inside Voices.
That is correct.
Which is run on a monthly basis.
The last Tuesday of every month.
Tuesday of every month. In that wonderful little performance space that we are very familiar with here at More Than the Wheel, because we've had both our live shows there, and which is a wonderful segue to the fact that you were a special guest at our live show, our melancholy-themed live show.
I certainly was. Shout out to my exes.
Yes, and you listen to that show and you'll know what that means. And you're sort of a new person in my atmosphere. What does that even mean? I met you through Inside Voices, came along to the first one, and it is such a wonderful evening because it's very, it's just very welcoming and inclusive, and it's a beautiful little performance space there at Merry Creek, and I think it's going wonderfully, and you've only had like two.
So the next one's, I think, the 28th, something like that. That'll be the third one.
Yeah. And the whole thing is just really an open mic format, isn't it, basically?
Yeah. So I've done like quite a bit of open mic stuff around Melbourne at all sorts of venues, and I love that format, but I was struggling a little bit with some of the physical spaces in terms of, I don't know, I think as a poet trying to perform when there's people like eating dinner and coming, you know, if you're in the front window of a bar and there's people coming in and out and you've never read on a stage before, it's pretty disheartening. So there was that element. And then also I think just really noticing a lot of other young queer poets kind of doing their thing, but the spaces and the hosting not really shifting to be a bit more accommodating for that. And I think that's really important that if we're going to kind of make poetry modern, that the formats it exists
absolutely
within are also kind of inclusive and expansive and really open-minded.
Yeah, because the core of poetry is also language. So the language revolving these events has to be of an inclusive nature too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I know what you mean. And I'm not going to call out these particular venues because they're all doing great gigs. But there's some venues where you literally have to walk past the stage to get in, which can be a bit intimidating, you know?
Yeah. I remember going to a new night once and it was in the front sort of section of a pub format, and just because of the way it was run, I didn't end up performing till about 20 past 11 on a Wednesday night or something. And I had these poems I wanted to perform to practice for my fringe show. So they were the only things I'd brought with me, but I ended up performing these three poems that were all, I guess, quite intensely feminist in nature to about 30, 60-year-old dudes who were all drinking Guinness. And they didn't really go down very well. But, yeah, I think it was that thing where the night wasn't constructed in a way where a diverse crowd either was there or stayed until the end. And I think that's all in how it's formatted and people kind of just coming and then reading and leaving. And I don't know that that creates a particularly supportive environment.
Sure. Yeah. 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 Well, people seem to be embracing it at Inside Voices because there was quite a great crowd at the second one that I attended.
Mm.
And I don't know. I just love the way you make the stage so welcoming that, you know, at the start, there'll be people who may not have even planned to do it, but by the end, they just pluck up that courage and get up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important. I mean, even some of the nights that are doing really well here in Melbourne are so competitive to even put your name down and you might not even get a chance to get up. And so it's hopefully going to stay sort of intimate and supportive. But yeah, I think, you know, that gives very little room for anyone who's really nervous or never been up there before.
Mm.
It's already intimidating. So not even being able to hold a space for those people, I think kind of sucks.
Yeah.
So yeah. Hoping to maintain that kind of feel as the months go on.
So tell me what first infected you with the poetry bug?
Well, I've been writing poetry since I was 14, 15. Probably not very good poetry at that age, but I think I was initially really drawn to it. Probably because I liked that it's sort of got this really malleable form. It's one of the only forms of literature that's kind of withstood time but doesn't really have that many rules.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Or at least we're at a time where we're allowed to break a lot of those rules and most of the best poetry that's coming out is really sort of challenging the traditional formats that poetry used to be bound to. So there was that. And I think just from a more, I love stories and I love storytelling. And I think poetry is kind of these little moments, these little snippets that capture an emotion or an event or even just an idea in this very kind of distilled way. And I think there's something so powerful about that. I've read poems that move me more than a whole novel. So I think that's pretty magic, you know.
Do you remember when you were 14, what moved you to first write poetry?
I think I had a pretty hot lit teacher. I think I had a bit of a crush on my lit teacher.
Yeah.
So I was always kind of asking him for extra reading and stuff. So there was that. But also, I think, funnily enough, a little contentious, but the first poet I read a lot of was Charles Bukowski. And it was also when I was kind of reading a lot of feminist thought stuff on the side. So it was quite a conflicting thing to try and understand because I guess a lot of people would argue that he's not a huge feminist.
But I like that kind of paradoxical stuff, that different streams that come into your mind.
Yeah.
I think it's important to absorb a lot.
Absolutely. And I think for me, what I liked about Bukowski was he was one of the first poets I read that wrote in a really accessible way. He didn't need to dress shit up for it to be powerful. He wrote in quite sort of plain English and didn't really actually become a famous poet until much later in his life and really like once he had died. And I think, yeah, there's something pretty cool about poetry in that sense too, that there's certain ideas you don't need, you know, a really kind of intensely immaculate vocabulary to portray an idea. And that's really powerful. And that's also really accessible.
Absolutely. And look, I, and yeah, on some levels, you could view Bukowski's work as being problematic. But I know many staunch feminists who absolutely love Bukowski, yeah, because there's a an honesty to to his work, and it's sometimes that's an ugly honesty, but it's certainly honest work. And you're right, I think. I think he made a lot of people become poets because he made it seem real and accessible and something. Oh, wait! Oh, well, I can do that. In, you know, in all its brutal, raw honesty, it was very approachable. Very approachable. You could dive right in, and it made it very seem quite real to a lot of people. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, and but then you last year you did a show. Was it last year called Wilderness?
Yes. So I did the first run of that through the Melbourne Fringe. I did two shows upstairs at the Gasometer Hotel, and then I did four for the Perth Fringe Festival in January this year, and I mean, the show changed form a little bit over those sort of two different runs, but yeah, it was a lot of fun, a lot of work. I had never really written a show, or let alone a one-lady show, so I really threw myself in the deep end, but it was good. I pulled it off somehow, and yeah. Still alive, still standing.
Yeah, that's a bold move. did it take you by surprise how involved it was once you got into the middle of it?
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And I think also, I mean, I grew a lot through the process, and I was sort of having to wear 10 hats at once, you know, writing, performing, kind of directing myself, criticizing myself, and then also doing all of the media sort of side of things. And, you know, it's actually, it's quite hard to sell yourself in that way, to kind of brand yourself and be like, I'm great, come to my show.
Oh, I think that's really something that really confronts a lot of poets, because you are, it's because that's a totally different skill to being a poet. But because poetry is not really a money-making machine like some other art forms can be, sure, a lot of musicians don't make much money. Mm. They've got to do their own promo as well. But then there are opportunities for musicians to move up to another scale, but it is very hard for a poet. So you're also expected to be your own manager. You're expected to be your own publicist. And doing publicity is can be so tiresome. Mm. But it's so important. If you're going to do shows, it's really, really important.
Yeah. And I think also it's quite, you know, it's quite vulnerable to, you know, own your shit like that and have to kind of love your own work and put yourself out there. I guess for me, the way that I got around the vulnerability of that was really reminding myself regularly of, I guess, the point of the show, which for me actually kind of has a similar premise to Inside Voices, which was, the formats that I was allowed, inverted commas, to perform poetry within felt quite restrictive, or they didn't support me in the ways that I wanted to be supported. But also there is a little bit of an ego around it or something, and a seriousness, and I think as a woman particularly, I use a lot of humor to kind of cope, and I think that does come out in my poetry, particularly when I reflect back on it 6 months later, a year later, 5 years later. I see the humor there. I see this sort of trying to create a story that is relatable and has like a robustness to it or something. And so the Fringe show offered me, I guess, a platform to write my own story using storytelling and poetry and spoken word and a bit of physical theatre and stuff too, where I talked about some pretty serious and challenging themes. But the whole way through, there's this kind of comedic aspect, this exaggeration, this melodrama, which I didn't really feel that there was many platforms to kind of mush those things together.
Yeah.
at other kind of open mic nights or performance-y spaces. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm kicking myself I did not see that show. Somehow I wasn't even aware of its existence at the time, probably because I'm just insanely busy. but everything I've read about it just sounds totally my bag. And, yeah, I just want you to do it again. have you got plans for more performance work like that?
I think in the future, absolutely. I came out of that whole show experience needing to retreat a bit after being so like, here I am, and then really feeling a desire to more foster that space for other people who were kind of just starting out. But I'd like maybe next year to finish a script I've been working on, which I want to try and poach my little sister to get on board with. She's got no acting experience, but she's a real character.
Yeah.
And I think she'll be at an age then where it could be really interesting to get her on board with this idea. And I'd really like to see how we interact in a kind of creative space together and perhaps also film the process of like writing this show kind of alongside each other as sisters who definitely love each other a lot, but are very different people.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. Yeah, I'm into that.
Yeah.
I like the idea of making a documentary of the show while you're making the show too. Yeah.
It's like show within a show.
Yeah, yeah. why don't we hear some of your poetry? Would you be up for reading
absolutely.
Some poetry?
Excellent. Got a few bits and bobs. All right. So the first piece I'm going to read is called Can We Talk? It's something I've written kind of recently, just reflecting on, I guess, my personal relationship with poetry as an art form. Can we talk about the time poetry saved us? About the time we realized we could never be truly abandoned? Only abandon our own hand, our own pen, our own paper. Can we talk for a moment about how words like I'm sorry, or I'm reaching out, or I'm shit scared, or even the word serendipity can be poetry? Can we talk about the time we thought poetry had broken up with us, but it left a rose in the mouth of a finch that waited patiently at our doorstep? Can we talk about how sometimes words pour out of our unconscious waterfall mouths and we gift them consciousness? And can we talk about when words get stuck in our teeth, lumped up in our throat, and we are gutsy enough to pull each tooth out like alphabet soup so another human can feel understood? Can we talk about butterflies and jitters and words spoken over wine and hand-rolled cigarettes? Can I read you something? At some ungodly hour, words so damn soft, the sun rises early to pour her pink Odie milk all over them. Can we talk about sending love letters in aeroplanes and sending texts that say, I think the moon shines out your ass, or last night was so sexy, baby, or just come home to me? Can we talk about poetry as an act of sitting with tough things, a rebellious act, the finding of beauty in verbs and hairy legs, the smell of old books, wonky buildings, and love that wasn't meant for this lifetime? Can we talk about formlessness? Can we talk about sending our voice out into the ether and someone responding? You single-handedly saved my life.
Oh my goodness. Yes. That was gorgeous and very beautifully read too. Your pacing is wonderful. And Serendipity is definitely a poem in a word.
I agree.
And it reminded me that your poetry can exist on so many levels. And one of those levels is that it can merely get pleasure from poetry from an auditory level, I think. I went to a poetry festival in Montreal, and they had regular sort of open mic nights a lot of the nights of the festival. And because it's French speaking predominantly in Montreal, some of those nights I went to, it was like, you know, 80% in French, which I don't understand a word of, but I still got so much enjoyment from it. Just listening just on the level of hearing voices and their pacing and their delivery, without even understanding a word they said, it still was very much a poetic experience for me.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Ursula K. Le Guin is one of my favorite writers, and she's actually written pretty much a whole book called Waves in the Mind, and it's sort of on how important it is to give voice to poetry and to literature, because it sort of gives it this entirely new meaning that can only be accessed within that moment that it is shared in a live kind of environment, and it can't even be fully captured through a recording, like the feel and the tone and I guess also the visual elements of someone's face as they talk and as they have their own kind of memories and associations with the words they're speaking.
Yes. Yeah. And which is the beauty of performance poetry as opposed to the written word, is that there are so many more elements to it as well. And there's that that bravery of delivering your work to an audience. And that's what I love about Inside Voices too, is, you know, a lot of the people there, that's not something they'd normally do. And it's just that getting up there and being brave enough to do that has its own element to it as well, which is quite a different to the written work, but they all combine.
Yeah.
Why don't you read another poem for us, Poppy?
That would be great.
Yay.
So what do we got? All right. I'm going to read somewhat of a eulogy. not really, but it's called Do Not Wear Black at My Funeral. Do not wear black to my funeral, like the time we wore black long gothic dresses with large brimmed hats in seismic autumn heat. Or the time my terrier ate my black fur rabbit, a seasonal gift from an old lover. Perhaps a metaphor also. Do not wear black at my funeral, friends. If you are channeling your inner sorceress, my witchy descendants, black magic, wear red for them. Reclaim their fire. Do not dress me in black at my funeral, you sweet little sheep. You beautiful, obedient, sad, good citizens. Promise yourself. Heck, promise me. Yes, this body is dead, but it is just that. A body that didn't make it. Sure. But a poem, your words. You are speaking my words with so much humanness. Hear that? your kaleidoscope mouth fantastically moving noises with all its aliveness. Breathe in a moment. Feel that. Am I not a little alive just now? I'd like a few tears, but you'd better laugh from your toes to your tongue. Out with the snotty wet face shenanigans. I was clumsy and strange, harbouring a brave spirit not even I knew how to fully own. An odd manifestation of a fleshy bod. Maybe I've got a few gorgeous kids. Maybe I rallied against the idea, made a point. Maybe my shocky uterus wasn't made to foster the cute poopy bundles. But you will see my face in the face of your most tender surrenders, egging you on, kicking up dirt, holding space for you to make your own little rivers. In colour, in the way you love the faces of your own children and mother. And if she is gone too, let yourself picture us, entangled in flowers, floppy hats, smiles as big as gum leaves, patterned neck scarves, shapes that swirl with their twirl, dancing, a little drunk by the ocean. But do not wear black at my funeral.
Yay! Wonderful, wonderful stuff. Now, there was a moment of our minds being in synchronicity regarding that poem that we spoke about before we started recording, but I'll recount that story now because I was telling you that one of my many jobs is a funeral celebrant, and I conducted the funeral in Brisbane last week, and I was saying how I was surprised to see so many people wearing black, and I was wearing a maroon suit. And then you talked at that poem, and then you even said about wearing red, which was amazing.
I know. I mean, you want to go down in flames, right?
You're very young, but do you think about death much?
It's quite funny. I was actually talking to my roommates about this last night.
There we go. Another moment of intimacy.
Boom. I'm just reading the sign on the wall that says, be prepared for a certain death. Like, is it a sign? I do, I suppose, in the sense that I think I've had a lot of lives.
So that's interesting. I like that. I like
sort
that.
Of, I was recounting an instance to my roommates last night where I had a vision of myself being drowned as a witch. And it was quite funny because even in that moment, I kind of went down laughing because I had the thought of knowing I would sort of be back or something. So I guess I like to have, in theory, quite a playful approach to death.
I think that's very healthy, actually.
But, you know, in saying that, I guess if you're, you know, I have had near-death experiences, say, in like a car accident, and that's pretty fucking terrifying. So I think it can be tempting as a poet to idealize. And I think it's about finding a healthy boundary between letting your mind kind of, yeah, playfully explore those ideas, and not just literal death, but sort of life, death, life cycles within your life that happen all the time in relationships and in projects. And I think, yeah, viewing those things as part of it all too kind of helps.
I could not agree more. I'm very glad I asked you that question because that was a very excellent answer. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most of my poems are about love or sex or death or all of the above. and I I've recently started doing conducting funerals, and I found it to be a very, very profound and rewarding experience, and I really wanted to do more of it. This last funeral I conducted was probably the most profound and affecting one. It was the most emotionally challenging one, because it was for someone I knew, and it really hit me for six after the ceremony. Yeah. Actually, kept my game face on for the ceremony, and I think I did a good job. In fact, I've been told by many people afterwards that they really liked it. But I try to put the emphasis on celebrating the life, and a lot of them had never seen a funeral like that before. They're used to funerals being very somber and serious, and because that's people's default. People don't know how to act at funerals, because absolutely, we have a very dysfunctional relationship with death in this country, in the West in general.
Absolutely.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's, definitely a lot more ritual around death in other places, I think ritual just generally is really important.
Yes,
even if it's not
that is something
religious, you know.
Exactly. I think there's been a little bit of a vacuum where religion is kind of receding. And I've got a hardcore example of that. Like, it's like 75% of weddings in Australia now are civil weddings, which is really high.
Yeah.
So hardly anyone's getting married in the church anymore. But so as religion is receding, you know, we're losing rituals, because we don't have a lot of rituals that aren't based around religion. I think rituals are important, and they're really important element in people's lives, and can be very rewarding and enriching, and there's knowledge to be gained from them as well.
Mm.
And there's this vacuum in an atheist society.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we do kind of sort of understand things and kind of process and think in a much more symbolic way than we realize or we'd like to admit. Even dreams are a really good example of that. But I think one of the real strengths of rituals around particularly big events like death or birth having these kind of these symbolic acts that represent these bigger ideas, generally in either a visual way or in the body physically doing something. But sometimes it's only so far that talking can get you.
Totally. Yes. Do you have one more poem for us?
I do, yes. Right. Again, a little bit of synchronicity, I think.
loving it.
This is actually one that did feature in the Fringe show. I really like it. So this poem's called Somethings. The moon explodes like a burnt balloon. Tonight's moon is a bull heart on a fruit platter. Tonight's moon is an echo of it all pounding through, over and around. Smelling of hot butter, trying to lead me astray or point with the whites of chalky eyes a better way. We must tell ourselves, it says. Do not be afraid to take up space. Allow yourself to become and not belong. Be your own child, born or unborn, for they represent our potential somethings. Do not be afraid to take up space, because even the existentialists have existential crises in their saddest hour. The moon is a body trying to warm its breath in the middle of a cold summer, in observation of its dream, only to be unsure if it is living it. It is yesterday's sun retreating from a quarrel with Venus and Mars and every damn star only to punish me from afar like I've been a bad Catholic. But still, letting me eat sacramental breads and sip red juice. I do not feel God, but I do believe others when they say they do. I feel pretty good about this. It reminds me we are all mostly shiny-hearted with orangutan eyes and strong arms. And we wrap ourselves in these obscure cotton designs to tell each other about our somethings. And we differ on the same magnitude that we do not. In our strange little ideas about the world, in shoes and coffee tables, in aesthetic, in the accent of the voice inside our heads, and in scattered decorated memories that look like a small town art supply shop, and in hundreds and thousands of minuscule characters that flicker around behind eyes, and in how we like our eggs cooked, and we hold up our egg, a little toast to the somethings against a fluorescent kitchen light in a shabby half-furnished apartment at something o'clock on a great street on the second level. And we fly up to level 592 only to realize we are sitting on the moon as if it happened to be a coastal park bench at sunrise overlooking the west.
Yes. Wow. We really are in sync today.
I know.
That's crazy. It's like I knew what you were going to read before you read it, but I didn't. Wonderful. I love those moments. Okay, so I think I'm going to read a poem.
Wonderful. I'd love to hear something.
Excellent. I'm going to read a poem based on the wonderful prompts that the listeners sent me in this week. So first I'm going to read what some of the prompts were that were sent in, because there's some really good ones. All right, so I put a call out for people to send me in some prompts, because that is a major element of More Than a Whelan. I create poetry from your creative prompts, which I love because, well, for many reasons, but one of the reasons is that it puts my head into a space where it normally would not be. Stephanie supplied the prompt toast and jam. Magda supplied the prompt Doris Day, bless her heart, who recently passed away. James Wills supplied the prompt sperm, but I've already spoken about my sperm a lot on another podcast called Hang On To Your Hat. So if you want to hear about my sperm, go to that podcast and listen to my episode. Rebecca Clairpage did a wonderful prompt. How clouds will sit low in a valley at times. The beauty and science of that takes my breath away. Gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
Emma did beetroot wee. And Ag wrote the prompt, the weight on an ant's shoulders. That's a good one too. So they're all amazing prompts. And some of those I may still use in the future for future poems. But for today, I've chosen two prompts to respond to. And one of those is supplied by Stephanie, and the prompt is the blessings of Mother Nature. And the other was supplied by Elizabeth Woods, and her prompt was simply abortion, which is a hot topic at the moment. So this morning I wrote this poem or story. I don't know what you call it, really. And I'm thinking up a title right now. I'm going to call it Goldilocks. So here we go. Life is a bit too much sometimes. it can also be a bit too little. It's so rare that it can be a golden Goldilocks middle ground of feeling just right. I've been searching for that golden Goldilocks middle ground for so long now. The answer can almost always be found away from everything that is so consuming. So I drove through the hills until the noise of the city had drained from my ears and no longer occupied my rearview mirror. I drove deep into the forest until there was no road, and then I got out of the car and walked through the thick bush until I saw diamonds twinkling through a clearing. The diamonds were particles of the sun bouncing across the lake. I stood at the edge of the lake and I told myself to breathe, even though I already was breathing. But breath, like swearing, is an art form. It's something to be done with consciousness. So I tried to concentrate on the breath and feel it rising and falling. At that moment, the water shimmered and broke in the middle of the lake, and a beautiful woman with golden curly hair rose from the water and walked towards me. She was wearing a t-shirt that said, "My body, my choice," and tight black jeans with boots that will ruin your life in the best possible way. "Are you Goldilocks?" I asked. "No, silly, I would never fuck around with those poor bears like that little brat did. I'm Mother Nature." "You're Mother Nature? Wow, I didn't expect you to look like a riot girl. I thought you'd be more of a hippie, to be honest." "Well, honey, that whole hippie vibe was fine when people came up with a name for me back in the 60s, but now, if you're not riding for nature, then you're not fucking paying attention." "Are we all fucked?" "Maybe, but quite frankly, who cares about you? I've never been the self-absorbed type, but I have to think about myself these days. I'm getting attacked on all fronts. My feminine side is being told in Alabama by stupid old white men that my body doesn't belong to me anymore, that the state gets to decide on my choice. And my nature side, well, I don't even know where to start with that shit. And old white guys are responsible for most of it. If I ever went on Tinder, and I wouldn't because, well, look at me, I'm a stone cold fox and I don't need help finding company at night. But if I did, I'd be swiping left on all those old white guys just out of principle. You know, Mother Nature, I'm an old white guy." "I know you are, honey. That's why I appeared to you today. Well, what am I supposed to do?" "Listen, everything you see here is better than you think it is. And everything you'll ever see too. You don't have to do anything about that though. You just need to know it first. Like, really, really know it. Then you'll do things about it because you won't be able to not do things about it. In short, just get your shit together." And then Mother Nature turned and walked back to the center of the lake and slowly descended into the water. That's it.
That was great.
Thank you. Just the inner workings of my mind. Thank you so much to our Muses of the Week, dun, 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 who are Stephanie and
Elizabeth Woods.
Thank you. Who are Stephanie and Elizabeth? I'm going to send you some sweet More on the Wheel merch supplied by our good friends at Lux Country. Thank you for supplying those points of inspiration because quite literally, and I'm using the term literally in an accurate sense, that poem would not exist without you. Thank you. And now it's time for Wheelin' and Stealin'. a segment where I and my special guest read the works of other people. And all right, I'm going to be quite frank. I don't have anything today, but you do, don't you, Poppy?
I have a good idea.
Great. I'm all ears.
So, you know how you said in the prompts that one of the prompts was just the topic of abortion?
Yes.
Which is definitely topical, and I've been thinking a lot about, obviously, what's going on in America at the moment. And I'm very angry about it all.
Yes. We should, some of our listeners might not know what is happening. So, in brief, Alabama passed some very draconian, archaic, medieval laws regarding abortion just recently.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And so, even the week prior to that passing, I'd been thinking about it because I'd been having conversations with friends who have gone through abortions. And I actually have a piece. I wasn't going to read it today, but you could read it on my behalf. It is a piece called For My Friends Who've Had Abortions.
Oh, my God. I would love to do that.
Okay.
That is an excellent idea. Yes, I will do that. All right, I'm so pleased today to read a poem for Whelan and Steelan by Poppy Sloan called For My Friends Who Had Abortions. It's okay to name it, any part you need. If you need a woman's arms to envelop you, just give me the I need a woman's arms look. If you need to go to the cave, let us wolves wait by the water for you. If you need me to close all the blinds, I will not ask questions, darling, but promise you will let me wake you. When the sun is pouring through on the pumpkin seeds you planted last Libra full moon, then promise you'll let me make you a hearty soup of them. You deserve every bit of warmth in your belly. The things you choose to grow will bring you nourishment, and you might not feel it just yet, but darling, you are so free. It must feel weird hearing somebody else read your work.
Yeah, it is a little strange. And I guess I didn't want to read that one because it's new and it's personal and I didn't want to cry. But I
I almost cried. Thank you. Mm. It's really beautiful and important right now.
Yeah, and it felt like a good, I don't know if counter is the right word, but I think there's got to be an acknowledgement that with this kind of global public debate about abortions and women's bodies, obviously we're fighting for that right for ourselves, but also there's so little tenderness in the conversation and there's so little acknowledgement that even when that is a choice a woman wants to make for herself or has to make for herself, it's still fucking hard. And
yeah,
it still has effects that carry on long after that act. And I think that's one of the most painful things about this debate being dealt with in such a kind of a brutal way, is that it's not even acknowledging that as a hard decision or that is something taking a toll on the body. So, yeah, it felt like a nice thing to kind of throw at you to read.
It was such an honor and a privilege to be able to do that. Thank you. Do you have something for us?
I do. I do. So, I will be reading a new poet I found, and I adore her work. She's a screenwriter, poet, educator. She's part Pakistani, Kashmiri, and a Muslim American writer. So she's got an amazing kind of breadth of experience, but a real feisty writer.
Wonderful.
I'll be reading her piece. Sorry, did I say her name?
No.
Okay. All right.
I like the build up though. It was good.
So her name is Fatima Ashka, and I'll be reading her piece, Pluto Shits on the Universe.
I love it already.
And so she sort of starts, she preludes the piece with this little description. On February 7, 1979, Pluto crossed over Neptune's orbit and became the eighth planet from the sun for 20 years. A study in 1988 determined that Pluto's path of orbit could never be accurately predicted. It was labelled as chaotic. Pluto was later discredited from planet status in 2006. Pluto shits on the universe. Today I broke your solar system. Oops, my bad. Your graph said I was supposed to make a nice little loop around the sun. Nor. I chaos like a motherfucker. Ain't no one can chart me. All the other planets, they think I'm annoying. They think I'm an escaped moon running free. Fuck your moon. Fuck your solar system. Fuck your time. Your year ain't shit but a day to me. I could spend your whole year turning the winds in my bed, thinking about rings and how Jupiter should just pussy on up and marry me by now. Your day, that's an asswipe, a sniffle. Your whole day is barely the start of my sunset. My name means hell. Bitch, I am hell. Bitch, yes. All the cold you have yet to feel. Chaos like a motherfucker. And you tried to order me? Called me ninth? Somewhere in the mess of graphs and math and compass, you tried to make me follow rules. Rules? Fuck your rules. Neptune, that bitch slow. And I deserve all the sun I can get and all the blue gold sky I want around me. It is February 7th, 1979, and my skin is more copper than any sky will ever be. More metal. Neptune is bitch sobbing in my rear view. And I got my running shoes on. And all this sky, it's all mine. Fuck your order, fuck your time. I realigned the cosmos. I chaosed all the hell you have yet to feel. Now all your kids in the classrooms, they confused. All their clocks, wrong. They don't even know what the fuck to do. They gotta memorize new songs. And shit. And the other planets, I fucked their orbits. I shook the sky, chaos, like a motherfucker. It is February 7th, 1979. The sky is blue gold, the freedom of possibility. Today I broke your solar system. Oops, my bad.
Oh, hell yeah. What an excellent choice. I chaos like a motherfucker. Yeah, feisty as fuck. Good description.
Feels like a good point to kind of.
Yes.
Good fiery end note.
Yes. Yes. Perfect. I'm definitely going to be looking up more of her work, and I'll drop some links to her work in the show notes so our
wonderful
listeners can do
yeah
the same, because that was excellent.
Yeah.
And an excellent poem to go out on. Thank you so much. But we're not quite done yet, because now it's time for the world of Whelan.
Wow.
It still cracks me up, that little sound. So, this is where I just tell you about the stuff that's coming up for me and the podcast too. And there is something very exciting coming up for More Than a Whelan. I'm very, very stoked to be invited to participate in the Indie Pod Fest 2019 that will be taking place at Brunswick Mechanics Institute, and I'll be doing a live show there on Saturday the 13th of July. But you can find out all about that and more, because they're actually doing a little bit of a possible thing too to raise funds for it. So please just Google Indie Podfest Well, actually, I'm going to drop in the show notes as well, but Indie Podfest possible. And you can look at it really as just like pre-booking a ticket to the shows, because there's all sorts of rewards and stuff on there. And really pumped to be involved in that. And I do have another special announcement to make, but I can't make it yet because I can't announce it yet. But I do have exciting news for More Than a Whelan, which I will be announcing soon. It's a little teaser. What do you have for us, Poppy?
Well, we've got the next Inside Voices coming up on the 28th. As I said, last Tuesday of every month. We kick off from 7, sign up from 7, show starts at about 7:30. So that's really exciting. I think also in the works of potentially starting a kind of like a poetry writing workshop as like an offshoot of the night, just finding that
That's great. That's a great idea.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are feeling like their poetry is not good enough. So, getting them to kind of come into the space a few weeks before the gig each month and
love it.
Workshopping stuff off each other, kind of getting comfortable with their own style and giving some tips and probably some cues and stuff too, similar to kind of how you work. So that's really exciting. And I'm also thinking for the next month, so not the coming one, but the preceding ones, I'll probably start kind of throwing some themes onto the night too, just to kind of give it a feel each month. Cause I think that can also help with the writer's block a bit if you're given some loose parameters.
Absolutely. And I've spoken about this many times on the show before. The other great thing about being given prompts is because when you sit down to write, if you feel like, you know, you can write about anything, that can be paralyzing. Mm. And but a prompt is still a bit of an illusion, because you can still write about anything, but it can just help to focus your creative laser beams.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so we're always open to newcomers or anyone who doesn't sort of personally write but loves poetry. It's a great night for that. And we also have a Facebook event page. So if anyone has any questions, they can always hit that up.
Jump on that page.
I'll be at the other end.
And then you can stay informed of the events and these possible workshops that are coming up as well. Highly recommend it from personal experience. Get involved with Inside Voices. Thank you so much for coming in today. It was an absolute pleasure.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to More Than a Whelan. Big shout out to my producer, Derek Myers, and Castaway Studios, without whom we would not exist. And a big shout out to Lux Country, our supporter of the show. And you can support our show by jumping onto our Lux Country online store, where we've got some sweet merch there. And I actually had a meeting with Lux Country yesterday about some exciting new merch stuff that's going to come out too. So there'll be some more items appearing on there soon, including Sad is Rad merch from our melancholy themed live show. So we're going to do some of that. And please consider doing that, because that helps our show. And then you get some sweet merch in return. So everybody wins, right?
Woo!
Yeah. All right. Thank you for listening to More Than a Whelan. Whelan out. Hi there, everybody. Welcome to More Than a Whelan, a podcast about creative writing written by me and occasional special guests, but most importantly, inspired by you.
That awesome podcast was recorded at Castaway Studios in Collingwood. Here, we provide affordable, accessible, professional podcasting production facilities to the full range of podcasters, all the way from basic studio hire right through to full season production packages. You can get us on castawaycollingwood@gmail.com or just look up Castaway Studios on all the social medias.